From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Maureen McCollum. Major League Baseball's 85th annual All-Star Game pitted the best of the American League against top players in the National League earlier this week, just up the river in the Twin Cities. And if you happen to overlook the results, it was the American League that came out on top, 5-3 over the National League, which did include some fine playing by Wisconsin's own Milwaukee Brewers. As with other professional sports, Major League Baseball has had its good years and bad years. New stadiums versus old stadiums, new owners, player trades and issues, and, though not for another 2 years, contractual discussions between team owners and the players' union. With this year's All-Star Game making headlines this week, we thought we'd dip back into our own archives to look back at the state of baseball some 10 to 20 years ago. It's part of our ongoing recognition of Newsmakers' 40th anniversary year. In 1969, Bowie Kuhn was elected to serve as Major League Baseball's fifth commissioner. For almost 20 years prior to that, he served as legal counsel for the league. His 16-year tenure as commissioner is second to current commissioner Bud Selig. Among the most significant matters tackled during those years was free agency. In a 2003 Newsmakers interview with Bowie Kuhn, local reporters, including Wisconsin Public Radio's own John Davis, quizzed the sometimes controversial commissioner on a wide variety of topics, including his take on then-commissioner and former Milwaukee Brewers owner Bud Selig's first 10 years.
I give Buddy pretty high marks. I think he came in at a very difficult time. I mean, one of the first things he runs into along the way, at least, is this sort of major collision in the mid-90s with the union, where the ownership was determined there had to be some changes. There had to be changes. And the union equally determined there would not be changes. And that led to the disaster that we got in the middle 90s with the long strike that wiped out a World Series and all of that. Probably maybe ranks for the Black Sox as one of the low points in baseball history. So Buddy has come in at an extremely difficult time. But what he has done, and I admire this, he has said, look, we're going to work with the union, we're going to do the best we can, we're going to improve the situation with the union. I think he's done that. We're not going to sit tight on the game either. We're going to make changes in the game. If baseball is going to have its proper position in the American entertainment picture, we can't sit on the formula we've been running. Maybe we need another tier of playoffs. He's got another tier of playoffs. Maybe we need a wild card club in the mix. He's got a wild card club in the mix. Maybe we need interleague play. He's got interleague play. Maybe we ought to centralize control of the administration of the game more than it's ever been. Get rid of the league presidents. Centralize it all on the commissioner. Make it more efficient. He's got it. Maybe we ought to run the umpires from one central office and centralize and standardize the work of the umpires to get a better product out of the umpires. He's got it. That's a pretty good line of successes that he's brought off. And so I'm watching, but I give Bud good marks.
Very few people other than Bud Selig are criticized more in baseball. Does that just come with the territory of being the
commissioner? I think it comes with the territory. I could speak to that. I was there for 16 years, and I think those 16 years are pretty golden years for baseball. We had a great run. Enormous buildup in attendance, enormous buildup in popularity. Everything worked pretty well. Some things didn't, but a lot of things worked well. Of course, part of it was the strike we had in 81. But apart from that, things worked pretty well in baseball. And, I caught heat right and left. It's funny because I think the American public, and this goes back to the national pastime status of baseball, I think the public thinks they understand baseball better than any other sport. Football's too complicated. Great sport, but complicated. They don't pretend to be Lombardi. They can't, or Pete Rozelle, or they can't. They're not going to try to do that. Basketball's a complicated game, but baseball, they understand baseball because they threw a baseball when they were 4 years old. They didn't throw a basketball or a football. They threw a baseball. People think they understand the game of baseball. Therefore, those who manage baseball, who administer baseball, come under more criticism than I think anybody else in sports.
What is the current state of Major League Baseball? Is it in good shape? We've come through another labor agreement. Was it a good agreement for baseball?
I think it was. Whether it leaves baseball in a good situation may be another story, and I think one to which we're not going to know the answer very soon. I think the important thing about that agreement is perhaps the stage it set. This union goes back to 1967. In fact, I was the first interface with the union for the management at that time. I was then a practicing lawyer, but they asked me to come in and handle that. So I know this setup from a long way back. Mm-hmm. And it's traditionally what's happened is we've had stoppages, we've had strikes, and not a very happy relationship over the years. Lots of difficulties, lots of animosity. Current commissioner calls it the 35-year war. But in the last negotiation, contrary, I think, to what most people were predicting, there was no strike, no stoppage, no nothing. They bargained hard. And very significantly, the Players Association, for the first time, I think, really addressed the fact that the management is struggling in a profit and loss sense. And if an industry struggles in a profit and loss sense, you've got going to have problems in some direction or another. And I think the players made a very genuine effort to try to accommodate some of the needs of the management, to do some things that might improve competitive balance in baseball, might move more revenue around in baseball from the more affluent to the less affluent, and thereby give some greater hope for competitive balance in the sport. And in other directions, I thought the union made a real effort to address problems. Not as much as I perhaps would like to have seen, but some real effort. So I'm encouraged by what happened.
Any sense that the clubs are going to take that revenue sharing, I guess they call it, and turn that around and invest it into their clubs, or are they just going to use it for the short term to make up losses?
It's a good question, John. And I know that some of the people on the player side were not so sure there shouldn't have been some constraints imposed on that point. There were not. However, one of the things that's very characteristic of baseball and has been as long as I can remember is an intense entrepreneurial sense. Probably of all the sports, it's the least cooperative within its own ranks, the most competitive within its own ranks. And that being the case, the likelihood that they will be less than at their best in terms of being competitive on the field, that likelihood is not very great. I think they'll do their best. Whether this is enough to put Team X, Y, and Z up there with the Yankees or the mighty Red Sox, speaking from my biases, remains to be seen. But I think it's going in the right direction.
Steve Rowe from WIZM Radio has our next question.
You spoke to the 35-year war. I would assume that's the late players versus owners. Is that what you were alluding to?
Okay. Yes, that's correct. Not my phrase, you understand. I borrowed it
right,
from Buddy.
Right, you mentioned it, though. What do you think of free agency? I mean, has it been good for the game? Because here we are decades later, and the war continues, so to speak, according to Bud. I think you attribute to Bud Selig.
Well, you might say the war has continued. I think the question that you have to ask, Steve, is has the game prospered? Notwithstanding the war, I mean, that could be true. I have a hard time saying that free agency is bad for baseball. Oh, I guess in an ideal world, and assuming you could find some system to compensate the players fairly in any sport, you wouldn't want to have free agency because you like to preserve identity of players with teams. Once you have free agency, you have this rapid movement of players in the system. Therefore, it's harder, I think, for fans to identify with teams than it used to be. And that's a criticism you hear all the time. That said, free agency also creates some excitement. It gives teams a chance to gear up and be competitive by picking up a player or two. And if it does not otherwise drive the system out of economic whack, then I have no problem with it. The difficulty, and that's why you have the continuing debate between the players and the owners, is that they have not been able to find a way to get the system back in economic balance. so that you have a reasonable chance of prosperity both at the ownership side and the player side. And until they settle that problem, there's going to be difficulties between the players and the owners.
Well, to follow up with that, in the most recent labor agreement, of, I think it was last year,
yes,
that in the way it was being painted publicly was that the players were somewhat inflexible in terms of negotiating, and I don't know if you agree with that, and I want to get your
feedback. I think that was the general right. assertion.
But as a layperson, and I'm not real close to baseball, but as clubs offer the contracts, clubs offer the money and have the choice to not offer contracts to players, why do you think the general perception is the players are the hardball entity in these negotiations versus and the owners are kind of
victims? Yeah, I understand the question. I think there's two different levels. One is the individual contract that the club signs with the player. There, the clubs are certainly not the hardball players and not the hardball pushers, so to speak. The escalation of salaries has been indeed because the management has repeatedly been willing to go out and pay very large numbers to attract the players they want to get. So I don't think that's where the I don't think either side has been particularly subject to criticism. Well, I shouldn't say it hadn't been subject to criticism. Management's been subject to criticism for overpaying in the eyes of many people in the public. As far as I'm concerned, management pays what the players are worth. And if the player can get X million from the management, the player is entitled to it. So that's not where the hardball is. The hardball is in the collective bargaining, which is the overriding and controlling decision, agreement, that governs the total relations between the clubs and the players. There, I think the players had been very obdurate over the entire 35 years of the relationship until the current bargaining that occurred in this past year. Then the players, I think, perceiving that the legitimate interests of the owners needed to be addressed, began to address those legitimate interests. And therefore, you see accommodation being made, agreement to more revenue sharing, which could have some effect on the players, and so forth. So I think what you see is a general willingness and a mood of cooperation with the management, which we hadn't seen before.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. On the occasion of Newsmakers' 40th anniversary and this week's Major League Baseball All-Stars game, we've dipped into our 2003 archives for this interview with former baseball commissioner Bowie Kuhn.
It was either last night or the prior night, ESPN Classic did a piece on Henry Aaron.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the controversial, you were obviously commissioner for a long time, but one of the issues was right before he broke Babe Ruth's record. And one of the things that ESPN reported anyway is that, saying it was factual, I wanted to get your side of the picture, so to speak, of the whole games that led up to breaking the record. And you ordered Henry Aaron to play, I think, two of the three games in that opening series against the Reds on the road. Henry, of course, wanted to break it in Atlanta. And it also fell on the anniversary of Martin Luther King's birthday, and the way ESPN reported it was that he asked to not play on the anniversary of King's death, and you ordered him to play, and I, of course, want your side of the story.
Well, that's a very interesting account. The ordering of Aaron to play two out of three games clearly was an order I gave. The Braves had announced, it was not Aaron, it was the Braves who announced that he would not play in that series so he could come home to break the record. Well, you don't have to play that kind of music long before a commissioner before you're going to have trouble. Here you have your star player, or certainly one of your star players, and you announce you're going to keep him out of the lineup in the regular season game so he can go home and break a record. Well, you don't play baseball that way. You're bound to go out and play every game to win. So Aaron, who had played in the prior season two out of every three games on average, for the Braves, was going to be held out of, you know, if they followed their theory, they were going to hold him out completely. And I said, no, you're playing two out of three exactly the way you played last year, which is the way you go out and play the Reds to the best of your ability to win. And that was the basis of the order. And he did indeed play the first two games of that series, set out the third, and hit a home run in the first game. Mm-hmm. The Vice President of the United States, about to be President of the United States, Jerry Ford, was there with me. We went down the field, had a ceremony, presented him with the trophy. I remember I even called the pitch. It was 2-0 count, Billingham pitching, and I said, Mr. Vice President, watch. This is the place. This is going to be the pitch right here. Just watch. And he put the next ball in the seats. But be that as it may. Now, the story about King, I've never heard that story before.
Really?
I've never heard any of that.
I wanted to ask you about the Braves, too. You played a fairly infamous role in the moving...
Did you say infamous?
Yes.
Infamous.
In moving the Braves from Milwaukee to Atlanta, did you not?
Well, I don't know if I accept the word infamous.
Is there a good story with that? Well, for Wisconsin sports fans, they may not be aware of it, you know.
The story on the Braves move is that when the time came for the then management of the Braves to try to move the team out of Milwaukee, and they got the approval of the National League. At that time, this is 1964 or 5, and there I was the lawyer, one of the lawyers for baseball. I wasn't in baseball. I was an outside lawyer doing work for baseball. And so when the Braves announced they were had the approval and wanted to move, they got sued by quite a number of people in the state of Wisconsin, including the state of Wisconsin. Bronson LaFollette, the attorney general, on behalf of the state of Wisconsin, so the county of Milwaukee, and so forth. So with that, in come lawyers from every direction to defend baseball, because they're, you know, they sued everybody, the American League, the National League, the commissioner, you name it, they sued them. So somebody had to be the coordinator of the legal defense of baseball against the lawsuits filed. In Wisconsin, I ended up being that guy. And ultimately, while we tried the case and lost it at trial before Judge Elmer Roller, he restrained us from moving the Braves. We appealed directly to the Supreme Court of Wisconsin, which permitted. I argued it there. We won it. And then it went on to the Supreme Court of the United States from there, and the Supreme Court did not take the case, so that concluded it, and the move was official. So while I was certainly involved as a lawyer for baseball, my personal views were never sought and were unimportant. I had to do my job for my client.
Right.
But if my personal views ever did become apparent, it was that I was then approached by Buddy Selig and Ed Fitzgerald, who were the two key guys on the Milwaukee side, to say, what can we do to get baseball back into Milwaukee? Will you help us? And I said, you bet I'll help you, because in my judgment, it's really a great shame to have left Milwaukee. It's a great city. I'm sure it'll do well with baseball. Then in my first year as commissioner, we moved the then Seattle Pilots, which had gone bankrupt. People forget we had a baseball team go bankrupt. And Buddy and Ed and their group bid about $10 million for it, got the franchise very much with my support, and baseball's been there since as the Brewers.
Miller Park is now in Milwaukee and has, in theory, solidified baseball for the next generation, I guess, in Milwaukee. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about all these stadiums that are being built and seen as the key to winning, I guess. Are they the key to winning, do you think?
Well, yes, in that they have a great economic benefit to a baseball club. I mean, if you're going to play in a second-rate ballpark, you're going to have a hard time drawing people and so forth and so forth, and you have all the difficulties that are attendant to that. New ballparks, more people, more revenue, more ability to go after the free agents and to run a good player development operation. All that's part and parcel of putting a good team on the field. So what you're seeing is a great array of wonderful new ballparks coming. And these are not the ballparks which were built at a certain point in the 70s. When you had these multi-purpose ballparks, which were built both for football and baseball, and really didn't accommodate either one adequately. They were too small for football, usually, and too big for baseball, and the conformations weren't quite right, certainly, for baseball. Today, what you're seeing is more and more stadiums built purely as baseball stadiums and purely as football stadiums. I mean, Roselle and I used to, he was a great guy to work with. We'd get in playoffs where we'd collide. We'd have to book the same field with events that wouldn't work. We couldn't schedule it. And so football being much more flexible than baseball in terms of home and home and that sort of thing, he would flip-flop games to get a game out of Cincinnati and into Cleveland and accommodated as no end. We had all kinds of problems, but we worked them out between the two of us, and we had to do some accommodation on our own part. But we got that behind us. And you also had, incidentally, also had turf problems. The football wanted one kind of turf, baseball wanted another kind of turf, and the grass was best for everybody, if truth be known. So we struggled with all of that. But the new parks are ideal gems now built for certain sports.
You have a situation, and lacrosse kind of lies between the Twin Cities in Milwaukee, a situation where the Brewers lost the most number of games in a brand new ballpark. The Twins made the playoffs in arguably one of the worst stadiums ever built for baseball. It's hard to make an argument that a stadium is, you know, makes a difference when it comes
to... I think any kind of comprehensive argument probably doesn't work out, because you're going to find exceptions, or for whatever reason, it doesn't work according to the general rule. But the general rule, if you're going to run a competitive franchise in sports, whether it's, I don't care what sport it is, you've got to put it in a good arena that really attracts people and is fan comfortable and attractive. So you're going to see that's just going to be the way it works. You may find an exception, but don't count on it.
Bowie Kuhn was Major League Baseball's fifth commissioner, serving from 1969 to 1984. He appeared on Newsmakers in 2003. The moderator was Wisconsin Public Radio's John Davis. Our series of archival interviews is part of this year's 40th anniversary recognition of Newsmakers. I'm Maureen McCollum. Our production team includes John Gatto, Mary Meehan Strube, and our senior news editor and producer, John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other recent editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make a suggestion for a future show, you'll also find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. For updates on future shows, photos, and more, like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers.